Great pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight, Doris S. from Louisville, Kentucky. I've had a chance to talk with her and be with her this weekend, and I can tell you I admire her very much. Now I give you Doris S.
Thank you. My name is Doris Ostrich, and I'm a grateful recovering member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. That feels good. I'm nervous, but I've been told if you aren't, you don't have anything to say, so I guess it's all right to be nervous. First of all, I want to thank, I know Sarah Jane's not here, but her the committee for inviting me, I think. I mean, I'll thank you more in an hour from now, but thank you. And I want to thank Ray for taking us under her wing. She really, she took us under her wing last night, and she guided us down to the campfire. And that was the first that we did share around the campfire. And also a first that the music in the background of cows mooing. I can identify with the speakers that we've had. I didn't know it was a prerequisite for Al-Anon to sleep in the bathtub. I thought I was the only one that did that. But when Linda said she did that, I can remember the night when I thought, I'll show you, I'll get me, that I locked myself in the bathroom and slept in the bathtub. And also Scott with so worried about what's had, how the toilet paper, you know, which is the right way to hang the toilet paper. I had that too until I was told, be glad I had toilet paper. And Sarah, the Alateen, her enthusiasm of the program just really, really got to me. And I had three Alateens growing up, and my heart really, really, really goes out to the Alateens. Well, I just want to tell you a little bit how it was and my recovery since I have come into Al-Anon. I was one of six children. I was the fourth. I feel that I came from a normal home, as normal as I know a home to be. We were a very close-knit family, and there was no active alcoholism, alcoholism at all in my immediate family. My mother was the oldest of 13, and, you know, the odds when there's 13. But her oldest brother did have a problem of alcoholism. He was the only admitted one. Later on, I realized there were several that had a problem. But he couldn't hold a job, and he was in and out of AA. And so, really, the only education that my family had about an alcoholic is when my grandparents, we lived down the street from my grandparents, and they wouldn't have any alcohol in their home because of Dave. And so, therefore, they all ended up at my mom's house because they'd go visit their mom and dad, and they'd all come down to our house and party. But whenever Dave was around, all I can remember is, here he comes, hide the booze. And that was, you know, as a young child growing up, but I always remembered that. I went to Catholic grade schools and high schools. I always had a belief in God, but I had a fear of God. I knew if I didn't do the right thing, something was going to happen. I didn't know what that was, but something would happen. So, therefore, I really didn't. I was shy around adults, and I liked to please them. So, therefore, I didn't get into too much trouble because I really lived on that praise that I got for how good I was. So, I really didn't get into a lot of trouble growing up. I was a happy teenager. I had a lot of friends, and I had a good time. When I graduated from high school, I went to a business school, and then I went to work at a large firm, which was Brown & Williamson Tobacco Corporation. That's kind of a dirty word around today, but this is where I met my Prince Charming and my husband-to-be 4 years later. He's cheering himself. Incidentally, my husband is here. here tonight. I think it's the first time you heard me call him Prince Charming, but but anyhow, we dated for 4 years and got married. Now, at this time, Joe did not drink. Now, he'll tell in his story about how he tried it when he was in college and what have you, but I knew him as not drinking. And we got married, and I continued to work until 2 years later, we had our first daughter was born. And 3 years after Pam was born, we had a son, Michael. And then 2 years after Mike was Diane. Now, somewhere between the last two children, Joe started drinking. And it's my opinion he was probably alcoholic from the start. But the first I can remember that his drinking bothering me was we were at my sister's house playing, and this is when I was pregnant with my third child. We were at my sister's house playing cards that night, and on the way home, he was all over the highway. So I demanded that he stop and let me drive. So he did. He stopped, and he got out of the car, and he looked in the window, and he said, "You don't want to ride with me, and that's all right. You can drive, but I don't want to ride with you." So he started walking. Well, I like to say this is when our game started, because I was all over the highway looking for him. I mean, he would go down little ditches where the car couldn't go. I'd turn the car around, and I'd look for him, and I'd finally find him, and I'd beg and cry and plead, "Please get in the car," you know. Then he'd go down another little ditch. So needless to say, he got home on foot before I did that night. I was still looking for him. So this was the beginning of me reacting to his drinking. He started staying, and when I talk about his drinking, it's not to be talking about his drinking, but it's how I reacted to his drinking. He would stay out. He wouldn't come home for supper. He'd stop at the bars. So he did most of his drinking out. But I did everything. I mean, you know, my sisters and I would go out looking for him. And that was a lot of trouble. I'd take the kids to one sister's house to pick up the other one because I didn't want to go by myself. And we'd find him. Then all he'd do was order us drinks, and we had to sit there and drink with him until the bars closed. I would call the bars looking for him, and I'd say, "Joe, if you would just call and let me know where you are, I wouldn't have to do that." So he tried that a couple of times. He did try to please me, but when he did, I raised hell with him because he wasn't home. Then when he got home, he caught hell again. So he said, "You know, why call? I might as well catch it once, all at one time." I resented the people he drank with, and I used to blame them. I mean, you know, Joe wouldn't do this if these other people weren't bad influence. You know, it's kind of like your children. They're not running around with the right people. Well, he wasn't running around with the right people. And I really, really and truly got a lot sicker than he did. I got sicker quicker than he did. And I don't know if it's because I did grow up in what I called a more normal home, or if it was because up until he started drinking, he was a good husband and a good father, and all of this started, and I, you know, felt he didn't love me and all these things that we go through. So I don't know, but as his illness progressed, mine progressed a lot faster. It was real important for me to know when he came home who he was with, where he had been, and how much he had to drink. Now, those are three very important questions. And so he'd come home, and I'd say, "Where have you been?" Well, by this time, I knew he bar hopped, and I knew exactly where he was and what time he left and where he went, because I would call around, and they would say, "Well, he was here about, he left about a half hour ago." And so I knew where he was, so he'd come home, and I'd say, where have you been? He'd usually give me the first place he went, maybe two places. And I'd say, you went more than that. And then I proceeded to tell him where he went. So I finally got to the point when he'd walk in and I'd say, where have you been? He'd sit down and he'd rear back in his chair and he'd look at me and he'd say, you tell me. I was a nagger, a screamer, a judge, jury, and I grilled him when he got home. And so when I'd say, how much have you had to drink? He'd say, a couple. Well, obviously he was lying to me because you could tell by looking. So when he said, I don't know how much I've had to drink, I'd say, you are not telling me the truth. Why do you lie to me? Why don't you want me to know how much you've had to drink? So one night he came home after the company Christmas party, and he said, now, Doris, I know you're going to want to know how much I had to drink. And I knew I couldn't keep count, so I saved all my stir sticks for you. He emptied his pocket and he laid them out on the table. And I said, you smart aleck, you went around and picked those up off of everybody's table. So I didn't believe anything he told me anyhow. My daughter at this time was about, my oldest daughter was about 11 years old. And she really got to the point where she hated me. She would fuss at me. She would say, please don't fuss at my daddy when he gets home. And I would say, you know, when she gets older, she'll understand why I have to fuss at her daddy. One night, I was getting crazy. But one night when Joe came in and he just wanted to pass out, he just wanted me to leave him alone. And I beat him on the back. I set him up. Because I had not finished asking him all the questions. And he looked at me and he said, woman, you are crazy. And he left. Well, I peeped out between the curtains like we do, and I saw the car out there. I thought, well, he's out there sleeping in the car. But about a half hour later, the phone rang, and he said, well, I walked over here to a hotel. He said, I have got to get some sleep, and you are crazy. And you know, I really knew I was. I knew I did not like my behavior, but I didn't know what else to do. You know, if I didn't tell him what he was doing wrong, you know, how would he know? So I went to the doctor, and I did ask for tranquilizers and sleeping pills. Now, this was 27 years ago, and I feel very fortunate that this doctor knew a little bit about alcoholism, because he said, you know, what is your problem? You're not this kind of person. What's going on? And I just made a little statement. If my husband would come home instead of staying out drinking, I'd be okay. And he gave me a name of a lady to call. He did give me the tranquilizers, no sleeping pills, but he gave me the tranquilizers. And I'm here to say I only took one, and I took it when I was all keyed up, and it didn't do me any good anyhow. And I did get into Al-Anon and flush those down the drain. So, but I called this lady. Now, I had never heard of Al-Anon, and this lady happened to be in AA anyhow. I didn't know anyhow. I just called the lady because he said, call the lady. And she said, after talking to me, she realized it wasn't me with the drinking problem. And she said, well, I'll have someone call you. So this lady called me, and she said, my husband and I will pick you up Friday night and take you to an Al-Anon meeting. Now, I'm sure she said Al-Anon. I didn't know what Al-Anon was, so it wouldn't meant anything, but it was just to take me somewhere that had to do with my husband's drinking. So anyhow, her husband happened to be a doctor in NAA, and they picked me up, and they started taking me to Al-Anon meetings. Now, the night they picked me up, I thought, you know, where am I going to tell Joe I'm going? And, you know, one thing he hated was for me to say, where have you been? So he wasn't about to ask me, where have you been? But he came home that night. I had asked my mother to come over and babysit, and he had happened to come home that night, and he said, "I'm taking the kids to a ball game." So I thought, well, okay. So they left, and I called Mom and said, you know, "You don't need to come over." Of course, my mother told me he was an alcoholic anyhow, because he wasn't like her brother. I mean, he still had a job. So I said, "I don't know what he is, but I'm going with these people." So I did. I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, and I cried and I cried, and I heard stories, you know, like her husband, what I called horror stories. Their husband was drunk and caught the house on fire, and I was saying, "Oh, I can't go through with all this," you know. And they informed me then that alcoholism was like an elevator, and that the alcoholic can get off at any floor, and to be grateful for today that these things hadn't happened. Well, I started all these anxieties. Well, I got home, and Joe did not want to say, "Where have you been?" So he would say things like, "Well, I told the kids you probably went to your mother's." And I'd say, "No, I didn't go to Mom's," you know. A few minutes later, he'd come in the room. "Well, I told him you probably went to your sister's," you know. Till finally, I said, "I went to an Al-Anon meeting." Now, he knew, he had heard of Al-Anon. I hadn't. But that particular night, tears ran down his cheeks, and he looked at me and he said, "I could very well be an alcoholic, but I want you to know it was 2 years later before he said, I'm an alcoholic." I thought, boy, this is a snap. Of the next night, he act like he never, why me say that, you know. But for me, I guess it was good that this doctor told me, he said, alcoholism is a disease. Now, as I told you, Joe didn't drink when we got married. He accused me many times driving him to it. My oldest daughter thought I drove him to it, and I thought I drove him to it, although I defended myself. So it really, really took a load off my mind, off my shoulders, when, you know, he said it was a disease and that I didn't cause it and I can't control it and I can't cure it. Needless to say, my sisters and my brother were glad that I found Al-Anon. They didn't know what it was about. But I used to call them, and sometimes my brother would go out and find him a lot and bring him home, and like I say, with, you know, my sisters, and I'd call them all hours of the night. And so now when I called them, they'd say, "What are those people telling you?" And I'd say, "Well, you know, that I have to let go of him and, you know, turn him up." "Well, you haven't done it." And I'd say, "Well, I have." They said, "Well, if you have, you would be asleep by now." So they were asking me, I was telling them what you told me, and they'd feed it back to me, because at that time I wasn't calling you all at 2 or 3 in the morning, but I'd still call my sisters. So the hardest thing for me to do was to learn to keep my mouth shut, and I would get in the car, and they'd say, "How did your week go?" And I'd say, "Oh, fine." "Joe came home every night for supper?" "Well, no." And then I'd start, "Joe did this, and Joe did that," and they would say, "And what did you do?" And I was honest with him, and I would say I beat him on the back, or I chained him out because he didn't get home when I told him to, all these things. And I finally got to the point that I was embarrassed to tell him these things, because they would say, "Oh, did that make you feel better? Did that change the situation?" "What did the kids do?" "Well, they cried because their daddy bust the door in," and you know. And So through the week, I'd think, well, now let's see. I'm going to be a good girl tonight so I can tell these people how wonderful I was. But that's what really started me looking at me and looking at my own behavior. And to keep my mouth shut, that was really hard. And they'd say, "Did you keep your mouth shut?" And I'd say, "Yes." But usually before we got to the meeting, I'd come out with, you know, "All I said was," you know, and and they'd say, "Oh, I thought you kept your mouth shut." And I'd say, "Well, I'm getting better, you know." So I finally did, and I finally got to be a pretty good master at it. And when I did, it infuriated him terribly that I wouldn't argue with him. And he knew, you know, he knew what to push my buttons. He'd say, "You're an unfit mother." I had a whole list of things that he wasn't doing as a father. Or he'd say I was a dirty housekeeper. So I've learned that I was supposed to say, "I'm sorry you feel that way." Well, he'd look at me, and he'd say all these things, and finally one night he said, "Damn it, any man deserves an argument when he wants one." "And if you don't give me one, I'll go out and find somebody that will." And he left. He left, but you know, I felt good about me, because in the past, we would be arguing, and then he'd leave, and then my daughter's, you know, crying and yelling at me, "You're so horrible to my daddy." And so this way he left, but I felt good about me. And it wasn't all this crying in the family. He just left. And so right away, I'd get on the phone and call one of my little Al-Anon friends and say, you know, I did. I kept my mouth shut, you know. And I was so excited that I could do this. And then another night, which really, I finally, as I could back off from this behavior and realize that he wanted an argument so he could get out, that I could finally start seeing the humor in it. And one night, I remember, and this was in July, and he went through the whole ritual. He couldn't get me to argue. And finally, he looked at me and he said, "I'll not go to your mother's house Christmas." And I thought, and you know, they'll probably be glad. But so anyhow, we finally got to the point, and I remember we went to a dance one night, and I was into that mode again, doing some things that I wasn't supposed to, like, you know, correcting his behavior and do this and do that. And he got real angry with me, and he said, "We're going home." And he said, "Now you've got two choices, to stay or to go." Well, I didn't, you know, what other choices would there be? So so I had learned, you know, to carry a set of keys along with me. So when he was drinking, if I got in the driver's seat first, he'd usually let me drive. But if he got there first, I couldn't get him out. I mean, there'd be a big hassle. So that night I made sure, I mean, I knew he was angry, and so I made sure I got in the driver's seat first. And he looked at me and he said, "Oh, you driving?" And I said, "Yeah." So he got in the other side, and he started this, you know, arguing and fussing, and "You're doing this and you're doing that and whatever." And I was playing these tapes, "Keep your mouth shut, keep your mouth shut." Finally he said, "Damn it, say something." And I said, "Well, what would you like for me to say?" Well, he said, "Stop this car, I'm getting out." So I stopped the car and he got out. And also in my mind was saying, "He's going to play this game, can you catch me again?" But I let him out, and there was snow on the streets. It was icy cold that night, and I let him out, and I went home. He was like 10 minutes behind me in a taxi cab, wasn't too long behind me. But the next morning, he looked at me, and he said, "It was colder than hell out on Preston Highway last night." I said, "Yeah, that was your choice." And he said, "Yeah, I acted kind of bad, didn't I?" And I thought, how this program works. So we finally learned that to quit playing those games. And one other night he came in, he had wrecked his car, and he came home to get the other car. And he went out, but he was smart enough when he got there, he saw the police, you know, lights and what have you. So he came home and he took a red marker, but he circled this in red in the yellow pages of the phone book, this wrecker that he called, because he probably was afraid he wouldn't remember who he called. But, you know, like 2 weeks later, he didn't know where the car was and I didn't know where it was. He thought I was hiding it from him and I thought he wasn't going to tell me where it was. And he finally said to me, you know, "Where did you hide my car?" And I said, "I don't have your car." And so he said, well, he called this wrecker, and they said they didn't have it. It was a filling station, I believe. But anyhow, so I suggested, why don't you call him at 3 in the morning, and maybe whoever was on at 3 in the morning would know. And so he did. And they said, oh, when we got there, the police record was there, and they wouldn't let us have it because the owner of the car wasn't there. And he looked at me and he said, "You don't play those games anymore." And little by little, we started realizing, and he realized that I wasn't playing games, but we used to play some doozies. Finally got to the point where I was really, you know, letting go of Joe pretty good, and my sponsor looked at me and she said, and I tried to get my daughter to come to Alateen, and she said she wasn't going to come to Alateen. She loved her daddy. She didn't need Alateen. Besides, her daddy's not an alcoholic. He told her he wasn't, and that I didn't like her, and she wasn't I just wanted to change her, and she wasn't going to come. So I had to let go of that. But I learned through listening to other Al-Anons and the Alateens, and I heard a girl say this once, to literally physically touch that child, your child, every day. And I got thinking about it. I didn't know, I couldn't remember the last time it was that Pam had given me a hug before she went to bed. Now, you have to get well enough to accept rejection when it comes to your kids to be able to do it. And I really thought I was there, so I thought, I'm going to try that. So I would literally go up and give her a hug, even though I didn't feel like it. And the first time I did, she shoved me, and she said, "Keep your hands off me." So I thought, well, the next night, I was a little sneakier, and I came up behind her and gave her a real quick one and said, "I know you don't want to hug me, but I just felt like I wanted to hug you." And, you know, doing this every day, finally, I mean, just watching this child's reaction, finally she would go limp like, "Oh, come on, get this over with," you know. And then I remember then the first night she came up and gave me a hug before she went to bed. And I sat there and cried like a baby. I said, this program really works. But I learned from the Alateens, for a child to have this kind of behavior, it's because she's hurting too. That they really don't want to act that way. But I mean, she would stand there and say, "I hate you, I hate you." And I mean, I really thought I had bad seed, you know. Her behavior was terrible. But as soon as I had guilt feelings like, do I really love this child? I mean, I got to the point I hated to see her walk in from school because, you know, we started all this. And I want you to know, she's a beautiful, beautiful child today. And it was through all this. 2 years after I was in Al-Anon, Joe decided that he had a problem. And he went into treatment. And he asked Pam to go to Alateen. He realized what was going on. And she went. She used to say in her Alateen talks, you know, "My mom used to beg me to go. But all my dad had to do was ask me once." And that's true. And that was another thing when I came in. You know, I resented her for, I knew she idolized this man, and I thought, he's not home to do anything for you. He's not this, you know. But in Al-Anon, and listen to the Alateens, how they couldn't love anybody, or some of them just didn't have any trust. I became real grateful that Pam had somebody that she could love. And so it just changed my whole attitude. Pam's 39 years old now, and about 6-8 months ago, she lives out in California, she's married and has 3 children, but I had talked out in San Francisco, and so we flew over to visit them for a while, and she said, "Mom, can I listen to your tape?" And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what have I said, you know, and so I did. I left it with her. And, you know, it took her several months. She just told me about a month ago. She said, "You know, I listened to the tape." She said it was really great. She said, "I cried a lot." But she said, "You know, I'm getting the same thing from counseling and from the schools, you know, on how to treat the children." And she said, I just think it's so wonderful how this came about. And of course, she's grateful for the programs today. But she went to Alateen, and the other two went to the Alatons when Joe came into AA. And so we were a family of recovery, and for that I'm really grateful. At least we all knew the language. Through this, our youngest daughter, Diane, she's 33 years old today, and she has 9 years in AA. So, you know, and I'm real grateful to God for this, because she did all her drinking in college and away from home, and I had no idea. You talk about denial. Her dad did. I mean, he could pick up on these things. I knew she wasn't going to class, but she'd give me this excuse or that excuse, and I bought right into it, you know. And when she came home, when she flunked out of school and came home, she was going to an AA meeting with her dad, and I said, no, you don't belong in that room. You belong in this room with me. See, I knew she was an adult child. And finally, she told me that she definitely was an alcoholic. And she had, and going through Alateen, she recognized that when she started having blackouts, she went to her counselor, and she told her counselor that that she felt it was hereditary and what was going on. So one of the teachers there was in AA and took her around to meetings for a while.
And in the meetings, she went to school about four hours away from home and stayed in Kentucky, but it was funny because she talked to this teacher.
And the name, and we went to an AA convention, and this, we recognized this name. And when she talked and said she used to teach at Murray State, I knew this was the one that took Diane. She remembered Diane, but Diane went back out drinking after that. I mean, she didn't. She wasn't convinced, but it's really, it's really wonderful. And you know, when I first came in, to admit that I was powerless over what Joe drank. So I tried to control his drinking, and I did all sorts of things. Like he always, when we left home, he'd always have a glass in his hand, and I hated for him to drive and drink. And one night, he handed me his glass because he was fooling on the radio or something. And he said, "Oh, this is from Minnesota." You know, I pitched that out the window. So we just had a car around, and then we went back home, and we walked in, and we just took another drink, and came back out, and we started again. But I had to let go of what he drank. That's how I had to work that first step for me in the beginning. And then I had to let go of his behavior when he drank, and then my kids came along, and I had to let go of people, places, and things. This is a real neat program, and it works. I had no problems with the insanity part of the program because I knew that I didn't roll in the same things. And taking my inventory and turning things over to God, that was hard for me at first. And I had to do that. I just pieces like oh my God. I didn't trust. I had a problem of trust. Just to turn everything over. Little mini successes. I let go of things, and it's so wonderful. So freedom. I was in that workshop this morning. Journey of Freedom. And there's so much freedom in this program. When we know we have choices, it's a freedom. And incidentally, I want to tell you, we had the best workshop that was here. And we finished. The people in that workshop thought they were the Olympics. They threw it up, and we had 9.2 in that workshop this morning. It was really a great workshop. And I'm going to tell you, I did some inventory in that workshop. This daughter today that's 33 years old, she's living at home. She did go back and finish school at Murray State, and then she came home. And she got an AA, but she never got what I call a real job. And she worked at the car shop here and there. So then she finally decided what she went into nursing. And she finished the four-year nursing program. So she's been living with us. And I want you to know that this sent my husband to Al-Anon. He's got how many years in Al-Anon now? She finished up last in May. She hasn't looked for a job yet.
She informed me right before I left, she wanted to have a yard sale because she needed some money. And of course, me and my mouth, well, you need to get a job, you know. It's hard. It's hard to work with her. But I know she came home from last year in school, and she was all upset because I had my boundaries at home. I mean, even though she lives there, and I love having her there, she really enjoyed it to have there. But she's a slob. And so she did have everything all over the kitchen table, all her books and whatever. So I have a cleaning lady that comes once every 2 weeks. So once every 2 weeks, I say, Diane, you have to get rid of everything off this table. Your room's yours, but she came in all upset and emotional. You know, my counselor told me I need to move out because I just can't worry about cleaning up all the time after I study. With studying and working, she has these little jobs that I said, can I have my bedroom suit? I'm going to have to move out. Can I have my bedroom suit? And I said, yeah. So she went to bed, and Joe and I sat there and talked, and I said, well, I had offered her to go in the basement, but she didn't like down there because it's cold and what have you, whatever her reasons. But we have a big family room and a pool room and a bathroom down there, and I thought we could make the pool room a bedroom, but that wasn't what she wanted. So anyhow, when she went to bed, I got to thinking that my mother had passed away, and I had taken several things from others that I thought on the dining way that she could use for my kitchen set and several things I had there also. I decided the next morning to tell her, she had all those things too, but Joe and I got to talk, and I said, none of the kids they're gone now. They don't use that pool room down there. That we could get rid of the pool table. And Joe said it was fine with him, and moved one of the bedroom suits downstairs. Now, the three of us live in a four-bedroom home, 3.5 baths, two family rooms, kitchen. I mean, it's a big place, but three people can't live there. So we could move that bedroom suit downstairs and give her a study next to her bedroom. Well, the next day, I threw these options down to her before I told her what she could have if she wanted, and she said, oh, that's wonderful. And then I told her, or we could get rid of the pool room and make it a study.
We wish you were living
with it. Oh, I love it. So that's what it was. But I know today that when somebody gets emotional and they're upset, to stop and think there are solutions if you use the same room. And not react. I was one that I just react on impulse. I never thought. I just reacted. The kids today, my son's married, and he lives in Louisville. Like I say, my daughter lives out in California with the three grandchildren, and it's wonderful being a grandparent. These children think we're wonderful. We do no wrong. These grandchildren, they analyze us. And that's really neat. But One thing about all the programs, my youngest daughter, she's gone through quite a few different problems and a lot of her own doing. But what I saw in this was my children and the in-laws all, joining together, supporting her. And that all came about because of the program. You're little and you're young and you always were spoiled and mother always gave in to you and all that. But they do support each other. And I feel real grateful about that today. A lot of my recovery has come through doing service work. And I just can't say enough about service work. And I've had every position just about that there's been. And I was told when I came in, just be willing. And then the only reason I'm here tonight is because I'm willing. when I was a delegate, you know, these names scared me. I was intimidated by, you know, these delegates. Oh, you know, there's these superhuman beings, until I became one. The same way with the trustee, until I became one. Today, I'm the chairman of the board, and that even scares me. And I have gotten more, much more out of the benefit of doing service work than I've ever given. I mean, everything I've done in this service, I have benefited from. And it's just such a wonderful, wonderful program. I feel like I really have been on a journey with Al-Anon. And it's like a highway. And it's, you know, some ups and some downs, some rough spots, some bumps along the way. But the main thing that I learned in any kind of service work, I learned this back as a district representative all the way through the board. When you get these people in there with all these different ideas, and some of them go, I want it this way, I want it that way, to know there's everyone sitting there loves Al-Anon the same way I do. And the only disagreement is we all think we know the best way to do it. But really and truly, we all want the same results. And that has just helped me so much. And I have just, through service work, I have just met so many beautiful people, and I just can't encourage enough. So just be willing. I know last October when we hired our chairman of the board as the new executive director, I was in my comfort zone on that board. There's no way I wanted to be chairman of the board because I was attending all the same meetings I always had, although I just had the responsibility until I had a finger in my face saying, you've got to be willing, I'm willing. And I am one of the benefits. So just remember, and I don't know when elections come up or some of your group needs something, just get in there and do it. You will benefit. And I just want to thank you all for listening to me, and thank you for inviting me, and I love each and every one of you.